Hello and welcome to Your Favourite Teacher. I'm going to do a podcast today on one of the poems from the Power and Conflict cluster. We're going to look at Ozymandias by Percy Shelley. Now, Shelley's poem imagines a meeting between a narrator and a traveller who is from an antique land, according to the first line. And he's describing a ruined statue that they've seen in the middle of the desert somewhere. And this statue is really a metaphor for power and pride. So obviously it's the power and conflict cluster, so you've got to find a way to link it to either power or conflict in one way or another. So I'm going to read through it, and as I go through it, I suggest having your own copies out because I'm going to make some notes and talk through what you can interpret from the different lines. Obviously, this is poetry, so there's not just one interpretation. This isn't just my way or the highway. You can come up with some things yourself, but it's just to talk through some things that maybe you wouldn't ordinarily think of. So I'm going to read through the poem once first, and then I'll go through it line by line, giving a bit more detail. So this is Ozymandias by Percy Shelley. I met a traveller from an antique land who said, "Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed, and on the pedestal these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away." Okay, so there's a couple, like with all of the poems, there's a couple of key phrases here that are particularly important and for you to try and remember so that you can use them as evidence to demonstrate what the poet's trying to say. So, I met a traveller from an antique land. It's interesting here, the adjective antique. Obviously, antique is something that's really old, but also something that's normally quite considered quite valuable. And I, who's I? Is it the poet? Who is this narrator? Again, the traveller, very vague. We don't know what they're doing and why they're there and why they've met this person. What we do know is a bit about the title. So Ozymandias is actually the Greek name for an Egyptian pharaoh, someone that actually existed. So this is based on semi-fact. And he is regarded as the greatest or most celebrated pharaoh of the Egyptian Empire, Ramesses II. Now, obviously, Egyptian pharaohs, there's this religious element, the idea that they're going to live forever and be known forever. And there's this sense of immortality and power. So we really have the juxtaposition here between power and things that we would expect to be valuable, and then really actually the reality, the shattered visage, which is like the face, like the front of it. So we've got, as I said, we've got kind of extravagant greatness on one side and then the reality, which is like emptiness, bare on the other side, which is important. You need to recognise that this is a way that Shelley gets across his ideas about power, which I'm going to talk through in a minute. So trunkless legs of stone. So again, trunkless, it doesn't have a body. It's just the legs that are left. And we can see this idea of the fact that this is shattered, as it says in the poem, but really broken down and beaten by time. The fact that, as I said, it doesn't have a body is significant, but also one of the most important lines that you should remember: nothing beside remains. And what's interesting here is you would think that this would be in the middle of a city. This would be celebrated. It would have been built to represent his wonder and power. So the fact that now it is, to quote, boundless and bare, there's nothing around, there's no one left to worship him. And that's really significant. So, shattered visage lies. Again, shattered shows this verb here, or if you shatter something, you destroy it. You absolutely obliterate it. Whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command. Not a particularly pleasant impression of this ruler. The fact that he's frowning and sneering, these are very negative verbs that he's doing here, suggesting that his character traits perhaps aren't particularly pleasant. Which yet survive stamped on these lifeless things. So we've got some sibilance here, which adds to the poetic and the rhythm of the poem. Lifeless things, perhaps, you know, he really wasn't a particularly good pharaoh, and he didn't look after those people that were under his command. So if we have a look at the hand that mocked them. So again, we're learning about this Egyptian ruler, the fact that even though he was in charge of them, he didn't have any strong feelings towards the people that were under his command. Again, we might be reading too much into this. This might be a case of the fact that the curtains are just blue. They're just blue. But again, if he's on a pedestal, it shows that he is elevated, perhaps closer to God. But all of these things are in opposition here, because we've got the words that appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. King of Kings, biblical connections here. Is he, he's better than the average king. He's almost immortal. Look on my works, ye mighty in despair. So all of you that are mighty, ye mighty. So other pharaohs, other people that might look to invade. Despair, be afraid, be shocked, because he is the most powerful. But again, nothing beside remains round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare. The lone and level sands stretch far away. We've got more sibilance here. The colossal wreck here might be a metaphor for power and the way that it destroys people. This power that he seems to think means that he's going to last forever, makes him immortal, actually has been completely diminished through the passage of time. And that's Shelley's main message here, I would say, is how power doesn't last. Power gives you the idea, perhaps these illusions of grandeur. Again, you could link this with, a great one to link it with is My Last Duchess. We've got a very powerful figure there, someone who believes that he can make commands and all smiles stop. So that's the line where he's talking about killing his wife. But again, the power there he's self-imposed this power that he believes from his 900-year-old name. I've not got it in front of me. It might be a 400-year-old name. So apologies there if I've got that wrong. But I think that's a really good similarity in terms of both these poets' purpose here about power and how it is self-imposed, and mankind creates this power for himself that is almost godlike. And Shelley's arguing that actually you can glorify yourself as much as you want, build as many statues, but all that's going to be left is decay. Which isn't a particularly pleasant thought. So the form of the poem, it's a sonnet, which is a 14-line single standard form. So it's normally a sonnet's associated with Shakespeare a lot, and they normally form love poems. But obviously this isn't a love poem, but perhaps that's almost ironic, because this character would have been deeply in love with himself, and now there's no one left to love him. That might be me just reading into this. It's written in iambic pentameter. And again, these things are only significant if you are going to find a way to talk about why that's significant. Don't just spurt out these things like sonnet and iambic pentameter unless you're going to link it with what that shows about power. And so again, you could link this with Shakespeare. He uses iambic pentameter a lot. We've got a mixture here. We've got the almost like the dialogue from, well, which is what's been on the carving, what's been carved, which is about the what he's saying to the people. So that's interesting because he's, you know, he's calling himself King of Kings. So that tells us something about him. But that's the only real insight that we have from him at that time, other than perhaps the look that's carved on his face. We get a real sense of arrogance throughout, but it's interesting that this arrogance has led to nothing. Boundless and bare, lone and level sands. We can really picture where this is. It's in the middle of the desert, but that would have at one time been an incredible, vibrant city, perhaps. In terms of context, it's, as I've already said, it's to do with an Egyptian pharaoh, but you could link that to a number of different other powerful figures. So when you're doing your comparison, because obviously it's all well and good knowing about one poem, but you have to think of how it links. And there are other poems where we see powerful figures being challenged. In London, we've got, you know, the French Revolution that's just happened at that time, and we see that perhaps the British monarchy are being challenged in London, where we hear about the cries of despair in the streets. So you can link it in that way. So even if it is seemingly there's nothing else that's set in Egyptian times, you can still talk about the influences of power and strong, powerful figures. Okay, so hopefully that was somewhat helpful. And I will do more of these because I've been working very hard on other bits and bobs, but I know these are quite helpful, even if they don't sound as super professional as everything else. Anyway, I'm Miss Meeks with your favourite teacher, and we've just been having a quick look at Ozymandias.